This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. An Israeli strike killed a senior rescue service official in Gaza. VOA's Christina Menenti reports.
An Israeli airstrike on a house in Jabalia on Sunday killed Mohamed Morsi, deputy director of the Gaza Civil Emergency Service in the northern areas of the Gaza Strip, and four of his family members, according to health officials. The Civil Service Emergency Service said in a statement that Morsi's death raised the number to 83 of its members killed by Israeli fire since October 7th. Residents said Israeli forces had also blown up several houses in the suburb of Gaza City. Medical teams said they were unable to answer desperate calls by some of the residents who had reported being trapped inside their houses. Later on Sunday, the Gaza Health Ministry said Israeli military strikes across the enclave killed at least 15 people. Christina Menenti, VOA News.
U.S. House of Representatives Republicans will be releasing a long-awaited report Monday blasting Democratic President Joe Biden's administration for failures surrounding the chaotic and deadly U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan in August of 2021.
The report contends the administration made its decision to evacuate non-combatants far too late, failed to communicate between departments in Washington and among officials in Afghanistan, and botched the paperwork for the departure of Afghan civilians eligible to leave the country. It is the result of a three-year investigation led by Representative Michael McCaul, Republican chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Democrats have insisted some blame for the messy end of the war, less than 7 months into Biden's presidency, should be laid at the feet of former U.S. President Donald Trump, who began the withdrawal process by signing a deal with the Taliban in 2020. Joe Ramsey, VOA News, Washington.
You'll find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Passage of a six-month temporary spending bill would have widespread and devastating effects on the Defense Department, according to Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin in a letter to key members of Congress Sunday. Austin said the passing of a continuing resolution that caps spending at 2024 levels rather than taking action on the proposed 2025 budget will hurt thousands of defense programs. Two NATO members said Sunday Russian drones violated their airspace. AP correspondent Karen Chamas.
Romania has said that a Russian drone flew into its airspace during nighttime attacks on neighboring Ukraine. Meanwhile, another Russian drone crashed into eastern Latvia the previous day. Romania's defense ministry said it had deployed F-16 warplanes to monitor its airspace and issued text alerts to residents of two eastern regions. Meanwhile, Latvia's defense minister said that a Russian drone fell the day before near the town of Rzeszów and had likely strayed into Latvia from neighboring Belarus. I'm Karen Chamas.
The World Health Organization's Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus urged the world to wake up and help Sudan in its health crisis.
We must focus on all people in need, all 25 million people. And this means additional resources are required to meet their needs. And we're calling on the world to wake up and help Sudan out of the nightmare it's living through.
Civilians in Sudan are facing worsening famine, mass displacement, and disease after 17 months of war, according to agencies.
According to available data, Sudan's conflict has so far killed more than 20,000 people. This is an underestimate, by the way. Displaced over 10 million people inside the country and forced another 2 million to flee to neighboring countries. This is the largest internal displacement of people in the world today.
WHO chief said that the people of Sudan were struggling through flooding and dam bursting, diseases including cholera, malaria, dengue, measles, the risk of mpox, conflict-related sexual violence, and near collapse of the country's entire health system. Pope Francis arrived in the remote jungles of Papua New Guinea, landing on the northwest coast of the country with a ton of humanitarian aid to be delivered to the missionaries and faithful who live there. Nigeria's emergency response agency says a fuel tanker collided head-on with another truck, causing an explosion that killed at least 48 people. The fuel tanker was also carrying cattle in the area in north-central Niger State Sunday, causing at least 50 cattle to be burned alive. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voice of America, I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, September 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The WHO called for an immediate ceasefire and a political solution to Sudan's civil war.
Sudanese are suffering through a perfect storm of crisis. We need an immediate ceasefire leading to a lasting political solution. The best medicine is peace.
Today is the International Day to Protect Education from Attack. Kenya begins 3 days of national mourning today for students killed in last week's dormitory fire. Ghana's main opposition leader will file his nomination papers today, Monday, to compete in the presidential election this year. An official of Tanzania's main opposition party is abducted and murdered.
His body was severely punished. The report of the doctor said that the acid was used on his face. That's why even the family, they didn't recognize him.
And Israel-Hamas war claims more lives as the U.S. hints at a more detailed ceasefire proposal. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus has called for an immediate ceasefire and a political solution to Sudan's civil war. But the best medicine, he said, is peace. Dr. Ghebreyesus is on a mission to Sudan to assess firsthand the health impacts of the conflict-driven humanitarian crisis. He held a joint news conference yesterday, Sunday, in Port Sudan.
Sudanese are suffering through a perfect storm of crisis. Over 500 days of conflict, the largest level of displacement in the world, famine in some parts and risk of this in others, 25.6 million people, over half of Sudanese population, are expected to face high levels of acute food insecurity, disasters including flooding leading to dams bursting, disease outbreaks including cholera, malaria, dengue, and measles with the risk of mpox, multiple reported incidents of conflict-related sexual violence, and the near collapse of much of the country's health system. An estimated 70 to 80% of the health facilities not fully functioning across the country. We need an immediate ceasefire leading to a lasting political solution. The best medicine is peace. We need to protect health facilities, health workers, and patients. Health should not be targeted. We need sustained access to deliver supplies and aid. We need to scale up disease surveillance in some states. We're blind to what is happening due to insecurity on the ground. We need to scale up vaccination coverage against cholera, polio, measles, and other diseases spreading in affected areas. And we need a massive increase in finances from the international community to scale up the response. If we do this, we will save millions of lives, predominantly children and women, who are today living on the edge of survival. And we will provide the much-needed calm that all people desperately need and deserve.
World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus was speaking Sunday in Port Sudan. Algeria's incumbent president, Abdelmadji Tebboune, has been re-elected with almost 95% of the vote, the country's electoral authorities said on Sunday. The French news agency AFP reports that more than 5.3 million people voted for Tebboune, accounting for 94.65% of the vote. Meanwhile, the United States has congratulated Algeria on the conclusion of the country's presidential election. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said the U.S. looked forward to continuing to work to further deepen U.S.-Algeria cooperation and advance a more peaceful and prosperous world in the years ahead. Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan has ordered the country's investigative authorities to give her a thorough report on the death of an opposition politician. She says Tanzania is a democratic country where every citizen has the right to life. Mohamed Ali Kibayo, a member of the main opposition Chadema Party secretariat, was abducted on Friday, September 6. His body was found in the Dar es Salaam neighborhood over the weekend. John Mrema is Chadema's director of protocol, communications, and foreign affairs. He tells me that Kibayo's body was not recognizable as he had apparently been doused with acid.
We got reports on Friday that he was abducted from the bus when he was moving from Dar es Salaam to his region, Tanga, because it was a weekend. He was going to see his family. But he was abducted in Dar es Salaam. Two vehicles surrounded the bus, and then they went directly into the bus and they took him. They were having guns, and they took him and put him in their vehicle. And the people didn't show any identity.
Who do you think abducted him?
According to the reports we've been receiving so far, we are suspecting the government operatives, specifically the National Intelligence Services.
Where was his body found? What part of the country?
Body was found in Dar es Salaam in a place called Ununio. It's just close to Bagamoyo district, and his body was thrown on the road, and the police were the ones who informed the family today morning that they have a body which resembles Mr. Ali Kibao's. And so the family informed us, and then we went to the hospital where he was. We have done a postmortem with the doctors. His body was severely punished. His face was severely injured. The report of the doctor say that the acid was used on his face. That's why he even lose his shape in his face. Even the family, they didn't recognize him. He had some other means in his legs. That's where they identified that he is the one. And then the DNA test was conducted, and that's how the family was able to exactly say that he is the one.
What are you hearing from the government or the police?
The police have issued a statement yesterday saying that they have started the investigation. But also the president of the country, she has just tweeted this evening that she has instructed the investigative organs within the country to conduct a thorough investigation and to give her the report on what exactly happened. Our call to the president is that it is the right time now to use the Inquest Act so that she can form the Judicial Commission of Inquiry to investigate this matter, because this is not the first. We have more than 100 people have been abducted and disappeared in this country in this year alone. The Tanganyika Law Society have issued even the names of those people who disappeared in different parts of the country.
John Mrema is the Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs, and Protocols for Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party. He was speaking with me from Dar es Salaam. Tanzania officials were not immediately available for comment. 3 days of national mourning declared by President William Ruto begins today, Monday, for students killed last week in a dormitory fire in Kenya. As of yesterday, Sunday, 15 children below the age of 15 are believed to have died, and 17 were still missing as the search for their whereabouts continues. Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua says DNA testing will begin today, Monday, to help parents identify their children.
As we speak, we have specialized teams here from the Directorate of Criminal Investigations. We have pathologists. We have people from homicide. We have people from the forensic department, and all this, we have the government chemist, and all those teams are working here for now. And that is why we're asking to be given time. There will be a lot of work of collecting samples for DNA to be able to match the bodies with the parents, and we are calling upon everybody to cooperate. So we are asking the media, we are asking the people of Kenya to allow our officers from the DCI, who are very competent, who are very professional, to be given time. The scene is still cordoned, and they need a lot of time so that they can be able to collect the body parts, and the government chemists, they can be able to check what could have happened. There is a lot of work harvested. The scene is very gory, and a lot of work is going on. So we are asking for patience in terms of information. I want to commit that President William Ruto has ordered expeditious investigations, and that is ongoing on, and when the report is ready, As a government, we shall make the report public so that we can also find out what happened, what caused the fire, what could have gone wrong. But I would want at this situation not to have any guesswork, not to impute any improper motive. We just let the investigation agencies to do their work. The government will assist the parents in every possible way to bury the dead. We'll assist in terms of hospital management, in terms of hospital bills. The government, the president has committed, and that is the message that I bring from him, to help these families.
That was Kenyan Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, September 9th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come, Samson O'Malley Sports. Over 250 million children and youth lack safe space to learn because of challenges like conflict and disaster. According to the United Nations, the basic human right to education has been robbed of millions of children across the globe. As the world marks the International Day to Protect Education from Attack today, Monday, a UN report said that in 2023 alone, more than 5,000 children were killed by conflict. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Armed conflicts, natural disaster, poverty, and other forms of crisis are keeping millions of children and youths out of school. A report by the Global Coalition to Protect Education from Attack, an interagency coalition formed in 2010 to address targeted attacks on education during armed conflict, indicates that there were at least 6,000 attacks on students, educators, schools, and universities, as well as cases of using educational facilities for military purposes. In 2022 and 2023, the highest numbers of attacks on education were reported in Palestine, Ukraine, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Myanmar. In each of these countries, hundreds of schools were threatened, looted, burned, and targeted with improvised explosive devices, with others being hit by bombing and airstrikes. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says countries should endorse and implement the Safe Schools Declaration and support the Global Coalition to Protect Education from Attack.
Education represents a pathway to a better future for every person and a more peaceful world. We can and must protect education from attack.
The number of teachers, professors, and education staff killed or injured increased by over 10% compared to the two previous years. Attacks on education increased in Ukraine, Sudan, Palestine, Syria, and Nigeria. A UN report indicates that government forces were the main perpetrator of killing and maiming of children, attacks on schools and hospitals, and the denial of humanitarian access. James Jogu is the acting secretary general for the National Commission of UNESCO in Kenya.
UNESCO works closely with governments, non-governmental organizations, and local community to protect education from attack and ensure the safety and security of educational environment in conflict and the crisis affected regions. And UNESCO, being a standard setter, it supports the implementations of Safe School Declaration, an intergovernmental commitment to protect education during armed conflict.
This International Day to Protect Education from Attack, a day dedicated to acknowledging and addressing the global need to safeguard education in conflict zones and against other barriers, comes 3 days after a school in Kenya lost 21 children to a fire that burned down a dormitory. Education authorities say the school did not follow safety guidelines established by the Ministry of Education. Jogu says African countries are working with non-governmental organizations to ensure school safety.
So UNESCO, in collaboration with the African Union and member states, have developed this continental education strategy for Africa, which includes specific guidelines for protecting education during conflicts and emergencies. Then we have capacity building across Africa. However, of course, continuous efforts are needed to ensure sustained protection and access to education for all children in this regions.
More than 72 million children worldwide are out of school due to conflict, with 53% of them being girls. The UN says the ongoing attacks on education disrupt learning and have severe short and long-term consequences for individuals and societies. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
The leader of Ghana's main opposition National Democratic Congress, NDC party, John Dramani Mahama, will file his nomination papers for the December 2024 presidential election today, Monday. Campaign spokesperson Joyce Bawa Montari tells me that the campaign will focus on jobs creation, economic recovery, and accountability.
Monday is indeed a special day. Our candidate, our leader, our flag bearer, His Excellency John Dramani Mahama, will, as you all know, be filing his formal nomination to contest in the 2024 elections. We're hoping to have this done at 2 p.m. prompt, and I'm sure that the National Party Chairman, many other distinguished executives of our great party, and many key individuals, the Director for Elections, Chairman himself, Asiedun Ketia, definitely people from all walks of life will be present to support the filing of nomination form for and on behalf of John Dramani Mahama and, of course, his running mate, Professor Nana Jane Opokuagyema.
What would you say is going to be focus of your campaign for the election?
Well, first and foremost, our candidate is actually focused on resetting Ghana, to reset the economy, reset education, reset infrastructure, reset health, and reset all the key social interventions. Above all, his main target will also be to reset in terms of fighting strongly against corruption and resetting so that all the proceeds of corruption will be investigated. He promises to run a very accountable and transparent government. And above all, you do know that currently one of the biggest challenges is unemployment. He has therefore introduced a game changer, which is the 24-hour economy. And we are hopeful that this will actually present hope for the many young people, nearly 14% of them, who have no job, no job opportunities, and actually no idea what the future holds for them.
Well, the ruling party can also say that they are focusing on reducing the high cost of living. How would your program be different from them?
Let me indicate that they've been in government for 7 years. If they had any idea how to reduce cost of living or hardships in terms of people who have gotten poor, I'm sure they'd have done so in 7 years. You do know that in 7 years, all that our opponents have succeeded in doing is a reckless borrowing, where Ghana's current debt stock is at $740 billion and counting. Sadly, there is enormous corruption, graft of a kind we've never seen before.
But when it comes to fighting corruption, Mr. Mahama was also president of Ghana, and it can be argued that he did not do a lot to fight corruption also.
James, let me state without any fear of contradiction that the record of Mr. Mahama and his attempts to fight corruption was a far better record than what we have today. The record of Mr. Mahama in terms of managing the economy was a far better record than what we have today. But the record of Mr. Mahama in actually building infrastructure, and it's why everybody describes him as a nation builder, is far better than what we have today.
Joyce Bawa Montari is the campaign spokesperson for the main opposition candidate John Dramani Mahama. She was speaking with us from the capital, Accra. The Israel-Hamas war continues to claim lives as analysts warn that the suffering will not end unless a ceasefire deal is achieved. Although a truce is still elusive, the United States hinted that a more detailed peace proposal will be made in the coming days. VOA's Veronica Baltera Iglesias reports.
Security was tight Sunday at the border between the West Bank and Jordan after a gunman opened fire against Israeli security forces at the Allenby bridge crossing. Three Israeli civilians and the shooter were killed. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu condemned the attack, believed to be linked to the Israel-Hamas war.
It's a hard day. A despicable terrorist murdered three of our citizens in cold blood at the Allenby Bridge. On behalf of the government, I send my condolences to the families of the murdered.
Israeli troops continue their operations against Hamas targets in Gaza over the weekend, as Palestinian health authorities reported that at least 40,939 Palestinians have been killed since the war began. Unless a ceasefire deal is reached and implemented, the suffering on both sides is expected to continue, warns Rick Stoll, professor emeritus of political science at Rice University in Texas. He spoke via Skype.
People will still be getting killed. I think hostages will not be released. I don't see a way that Israel can defeat Hamas, and they would be better off trying to achieve some kind of a settlement now.
A similar sentiment was expressed on Saturday in Tel Aviv by relatives of those captured in the October 7th Hamas terrorist attack that killed 1,200. It was the first time that the families protested alongside anti-government demonstrators. Ifat Calderon's cousin is one of the hostages.
If we want to make a change here in Israel, we got to go out and shout for stop the war and for a deal now.
As a mediator, the United States can only do so much to help bring lasting peace to the region, analyst Stoll says.
I don't think we have a significant amount of influence over the parties. I think they are doing what they think is best for them.
The head of the CIA, William Burns, did announce on Saturday that a more detailed ceasefire proposal will be made in the coming days. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with rugby as South Africa fought back to beat New Zealand and close in on the rugby championship title after the fourth of six rounds. South Africa regained the Freedom Cup and put a hand on the rugby championship trophy by beating New Zealand 18-12 for a rare fourth successive time on Saturday. The Springboks trailed 9-3 at halftime but scored the only two tries of the penalty-plagued game to remain unbeaten in the championship after four rounds. They can clinch their first championship since 2019 before they won the last two Rugby World Cups in 2 weeks against the Pumas in Argentina. In football news, 10 young footballers have been selected to represent Rwanda at the FC Bayern Youth Cup, an international under-16 tournament organized by FC Bayern Munich. The selection event took place at the Kigali Pele Stadium. The players were chosen from a pool of 100 participants, all aged 15 and 16, who competed in the FC Bayern Youth Cup Rwanda. In the meantime, the Rwanda's new Minister of Sports, Richard Irishima, has said that the practice of granting foreign players Rwandan citizenship to represent national teams is only a short-term strategy. Irishima's comment came at a time several of the country's sports teams, particularly in basketball and football, have been benefiting from the presence of foreign-born players. In an interview, Irishima clarified that the policy of naturalizing foreign players is not part of the country's long-term vision. And in the CAF Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers, the second round of the 2025 CAF AFCON qualifiers got underway on Sunday. Tunisia put another firm grip in their Africa Cup of Nations Morocco 2025 qualifiers after registering a 2-1 victory over the Gambia in the match played at the Ben Ahmed Al Abidi Stadium in Morocco. The victory sees the former champions extend their lead at the top of Group A following their slender 1-0 win over Madagascar last Thursday. 8 matches are scheduled to be played on Monday as match day 2 of the qualifiers continues throughout the week. In athletics, the funeral of Ugandan Olympic runner Rebecca Cheptegei, who died in Kenya after being set on fire by her boyfriend, will be held on September the 14th in her home country. The 33-year-old, who competed in the women's marathon at the Paris Olympics last month, succumbed to severe burns on Thursday, 4 days after being doused with petrol and set alight at her home in western Kenya. Staying with Kenya, the third edition of the Nairobi City Marathon took place on Sunday in Nairobi. Eliud Mangut won with the men's 42 kilometers race after timing 2 hours and 9.47 seconds, followed by Josphat Bett and Emmanuel Sekou. And that does it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, September 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.